As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the game World Cup 22. As we approach the start of the tournament on Sunday, our very own Jonathan Northcroft has sat down for a special bonus edition alongside England's record goal scorer, Wayne Rooney.
I guess we've got to start with your metatarsal injury, and you've told the story many times. But I was interested to know what the chain of events was from doing the injury to, you know, the bit that we know about, which is the wrangle over when you were, whether you were fit or not. Did you go to a hospital in London? Did you?
No, I went in Manchester. So got the bus, I can't remember, bus or train.
Yeah.
Or flight, actually, I can't remember. Back to Manchester, so I went to a hospital in Manchester. We done the x-ray first, and sometimes you don't see it on the x-ray, but you could see straight away.
Right, big split.
So knew straight away, and then done the scan obviously to see exactly what it was, if there was any ligament damage and stuff, which thankfully there wasn't. It was just a clear break. So really from that day, I went in, I was with the club doctor, physio, we got a oxygen chamber out, so we put that in the car park at Carrington, and I was in that for about 10 days, 180 minutes a day. I was asking, does it work? And they were like, I don't think there was any evidence.
Yeah.
Like, we've sat in here for 180 minutes a day. That was horrible. So we've done that for about 10 days. Obviously, it was doing me gym work and rehab and stuff. And it wasn't actually that long. I think it was about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I was back on the grass. Alan Smith was injured at the time.
Yeah, I remember.
He was coming back from his when he broke his ankle.
Yeah.
So we were going out on bike. We got lost, actually. We were out on a bike ride with the physio and ended up getting lost. So I think we'd done about 70 miles.
Around Carrington?
Out around Manchester. Yeah. Around, where's that area there? It's around Sale, is it?
Yeah.
But then I was back on the grass after about 3 weeks, and it was sore. I could still feel it around the bar. I just pushed through it, and I knew once I was on the grass, I knew it'd be okay.
But you say you knew it would be okay. I mean, I guess you were just determined to play. But at the back of your mind, were there any like question marks that I might be able to play, but I won't be at my best?
Not really, because you always think you're going to be fine, and fitness wise, I went out for that long.
Yeah,
fitness wise, so you always think you're fine. Obviously, I was doing stuff in the gym, but the thing you miss is obviously the games and the training, which that takes obviously a bit of time to build up. So, but at the time, I didn't think that.
When did it become clear to you that Fergie might have preferred if you didn't go?
I think I knew there was arguments between him and Sven and United and England, and and that's when they sent the independent specialist over and left the decision to him. So, but not, I was always wanting to go. I was going to be there. And obviously, he was trying to do the best for United.
Yeah.
But obviously, and England obviously wanted me there. So, I thought I'd do everything I could really to try and get fit.
And I remember you telling me the independent specialist how he tested your foot. Could you just
tell me? He come out, we do a little bit on the grass, and then we walked into the room and he just stamped on my foot. So he was a shoulder specialist.
Was he?
I think so. So I didn't get it.
Right.
So he just said, yeah, you're fit. That was it. So it was strange. The whole thing was strange, really. I flew back and forth from Germany a couple of times. Yeah. And so the whole preparations went right from that point of view. And it's only when you look back and you get a little bit older and you think, what are you doing? It's shouldn't have done it. And, and that's probably what Fergie was seeing as well. So looking back, I shouldn't have went, but at the time, I was doing everything I could to be there.
I think you were in an impossible position though, because if you hadn't gone, that would be very difficult to digest as a young player.
Yeah, and that's at the time, that's what I was just looking, and I've always been positive as well. So I think I was just thinking, right, I'll come in and get me training and get and I was always looking, thinking if I get into the knockout stages, that's when I'll be at my best. And I actually think the Polish game I was playing okay before I got sent off as well. So I think I was starting to at the Sweden game where I didn't do that well, Ecuador game. But I think I was starting to feel back to almost getting towards full fitness.
Sweden was difficult because Michael got injured very early, didn't he?
Yeah, Michael done his cruciate, didn't he, early on. And and normally England Sweden games are boring anyway.
Yeah.
So normally there's not many goals in them. And so it's just frustrating. That was just purely a pressure of putting on myself, really.
Were you able to shut out the media side of things? Because, you know, it was like there's a camera following your every move. He's flying back to Germany now. He's arriving at the hotel. You know, it's almost
I didn't really think much of it, to be honest. I was just trying to get back on the pitch playing. So we're not ideal, obviously, but it's because they might be when you land or you turn up the hospital, but they weren't actually following you.
Yeah.
I think because they knew when I was going to the hospital and when I was flying, it was just the fact that they were just there at them locations, really.
I find it interesting that you said earlier that in terms of the camp, it was brilliant, because the perception from the outside was that, you know, Baden-Baden and the England camp, they got it all wrong and it was a circus and it was a bit of a disaster. But inside, you felt it was a really good camp.
Yeah, no, it was. I think the hotel was nice. Everything was fine. And obviously, the stuff with the families and stuff, that was different hotel, different place.
Yeah.
So that's it. When we were all as one and your families going out and coming back to your hotel, that was a completely separate thing. And which happens in all the tournaments. It's happened since. That's the families going over to support and same as the fans, and the fans are going when they go out. So for me, that weren't really a distraction at all. I think we were, everything was right.
The way that squad was portrayed, and you know, the press was part of it as well, so we took responsibility, but I think we portrayed you guys as a quite egotistical squad, lots of big egos, playing for top clubs, maybe didn't get on with each other. Believe their own hype.
I didn't see that, and I've heard players, I'm surprised actually, I've heard players come out and say all these players are sat here, these are here. I didn't really see that at all. I don't know whether that's me being bland, because I'd speak to all of them. Like after games, I'd sit up with Ashley Cole and Frank Lampard.
So the United Chelsea thing didn't matter.
So no, I'd become really close with Ash, so I'd sit up with them. I'd be sitting with Stevie. So I very rarely actually sat with the United lads.
Yeah, to get away from Gary.
So I very rarely sat with them, and I didn't see that at all. I've actually got the bit of it was on that film.
Yeah.
I've got a DVD from the whole camp.
Oh, is that the behind the scenes?
Yeah,
the
which back. Clearly shows that's not the case.
Yeah.
When you watch that back. So I'm surprised when I see players coming out saying that. And maybe that was a bit before my time when that was happening, but in my time, I didn't see that.
Why didn't it click on the pitch the way that we expected it?
I think the first thing, Sven came out, didn't he, I think, and said, if everyone's fit, this is my starting 11. And I think that for the lads who weren't in that starting 11 was tough. I think that was a mistake from Sven to do that. We literally have one way of playing and one system, and I think, and again, when you look back, you could say you had Scholes, Gerrard, Lampard, you play dancing in the midfield. So you go with one striker, and so there's always things you can look back on and say, if we'd done this, we'd have a better chance. And then we were unlucky. I think in 2004, scoring penalties, 2006, scoring penalties, both in the quarterfinals. If you win one of them, we could quite easily have gone and won the tournament. So it's that bit of luck which you need.
That's interesting, because do you feel that in 2006 the team was actually growing, it was starting to come together?
Yeah, I think, and you see how long the lads play with 10 men against Portugal, and we've arguably the best team in that as well. And so to lose on penalties, it's obviously always hurt and disappointing, but that's when ever say any team needs a bit of luck throughout the tournament to win it.
It's interesting because the Portuguese keeper Ricardo said recently in an interview that they were playing for penalties.
I think we were unlucky, and people say, oh, we failed, which we did because we didn't win anything. But actually, I think we were a bit unlucky in the two tournaments in 2004 and 2006.
You touched on Sven. What was he like as a manager? That was his last tournament, and he paid a bit of a price, I guess, for not winning with the Golden Generation. Yeah. But did you like him? Did you think he did a good job for England?
Yeah, I think he done well again. You judged on performances and whether you win stuff, of course, and he never done that. But I think we done well in some of the tournaments, and we were unlucky. And as a manager, he was really calm. Obviously, you see his demeanour and really well liked by the players. I think that one mistake he made is when he named the team and said that'd be my team. But I think the one thing we didn't have then is what we've got now is we didn't have that depth in the squad.
Yeah, I mean, he was, I guess the big sort of obsession was the midfield, Gerrard and Lampard. Where should Beckham play? When you think about it, with Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes, Beckham, Hargreaves, Carrick, it's going to be hard for any manager to make sense of that as a, you know, get those players into a team. How do you think he could have done it differently?
Play three in there. It gives him one extra option.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the issues, obviously we had Becks on the right. And one of the issues was wide left. We didn't really have a wide left player. So I think I could have went and played on the left. And he could play Michael up top.
And you'd have been happy to do that.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I think Scholesy out there, or Stevie played out there a few times. Was wasted really.
In terms of yourself and not being 100%, you revealed recently that actually it wasn't necessarily the metatarsal, but it was what happened in training when you were on left. Can you just tell?
Yeah, no, it was my first session back, and we were jogging around in the warm up, and I pinged the ball, and I just felt me groin go safe away. So. From that really, literally every day was just getting work on. I was on painkillers, Sven didn't know, and I was managing it. I've known my right at stuff like that where I can manage them and play through injuries, but it just weren't ideal.
When you told me that, I found it incredible, because the thing I remember from that Portugal game was how much ground you had to cover.
Yeah.
You were almost like a one-man attack, and then we sat in and knocking the ball in the channels for you and stuff. I mean, that was hard going that day, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you can match that, your adrenaline and everything. It's normal, you take tablet painkillers and stuff. And I always remember, I think it was just before the first, might have been the Sweden game, actually, before the game, where I'd been at work on it, and it bled, and my whole thigh was black. I remember thinking, so I remember like trying to obviously hide them and
like
stuff.
Like wear the shorts.
But I just thought I'd get through it and didn't report it really. And then I went for a scan after the tournament, and it was a 6 centimetre tear.
And did that put you out for, did that compromise the pre-season?
I think it was just at the first week of pre-season I started, and I actually got sent off again in pre-season. We played Porto and went off ahead. It was never a red card. So the Dutch, because it's a tournament.
Oh, now I remember. You were Dutch, suspended.
Yeah, the Dutch FA passed it on to the English FA and said, you can suspend them or not, it's up to you, whatever. And they banned me for 3 games.
Yeah, the FA.
Because Scholesy got sent off as well in the same game.
Yeah.
So they banned me and Scholesy.
I remember now.
The FA. Which Stevie got sent off the year before, did nothing. So that was, I think that was the FA's way of punishing me for getting sent off.
Yeah, yeah.
In the World Cup.
Is there anything left to say about the sending off? You've had to relive that moment.
Even being honest, I don't know whether I've meant to do it, whether it just happened, I really don't know. And I'm still not sure what the red card.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't think I've...
You haven't stamped.
I haven't stamped. I've just put my foot down, so it's a foul anyway before that, but...
Yeah. Cavalli was fouling you.
Yeah, but I honestly couldn't tell you whether it meant to or not. I don't know.
I guess those are those heat of the moment things that... Maybe you're not.
Yeah,
you're not making decisions.
There's times where that happens in games, yeah. And it's happened a few times with me, and your mind just goes blank, and it happened yet. So,
yeah,
that was one.
I don't think you saw Ronaldo wink at the time. When did you become aware?
I think it was after the game. I was watching some documentary on USA in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
First game, who was he playing? The US were playing, it might have been Russia or one of the basketball teams, I can't remember. And Kobe Bryant was playing his teammate. First thing he done was just went and flattened him.
Right.
First play of the game.
Really?
Just went and flattened him. And they're all his teammates to talk about on the documentary, saying they were all in shock. And that was his way of saying, I'm not your teammate.
Not today, not Dallas today.
So, and it's similar to... Say with me and Ronaldo or anyone who you played against for that game, your rivals. You do anything you can to win. So
I mean, you diffused the situation by taking that view and by making sure that Cristiano was okay actually and looked after, because you knew there'd be a lot of criticism of him in England.
Yeah, I think once the World Cup was over, maybe my focus then was on Man United.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'd go away and have some time off, but. My focus was purely on United then.
When did you see him next? Was it at the training ground?
Just the first day of pre-season. Yeah. Or he was actually...
Yeah.
I think he might have been a couple of weeks later because they were a bit further. So just back at training, yeah.
And did you go and make a point of having a chat with him straight away? Or nothing? Just
no, I spoke to him regularly on the phone. As normal as we would do anyway. Yeah. So it wasn't a big deal, really. I think, obviously, the press were trying to make it bigger... It was actually forgot about.
Yeah, I think quite soon into that season, you assisted him for a goal.
First game. Fulham at home. I scored two, he scored one. I cut in and crossed it in. And
yeah.
He scored, but not even, that weren't even on our man. That mad.
Yeah.
Honestly, it weren't. It was just.
It's so funny because that's like sometimes there's things that in the press box we're obsessed about and then speak to someone like yourself and you say it wasn't even in our thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think you can see, and I can see why, obviously.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously if I turn up and train and pull them, it's a big thing and or whatever, but it went something which actually but I spoke to him after the game, and then spoke to him on the phone, like wishing good luck for the next can't remember if they played, but the semi-final, you know, big thing. Right.
Rolling on to 2010, the thing that really sticks out for me was how good you've been in qualifying.
Yeah.
In particular, the Croatia game at Wembley, 5-1. I remember you and Stephen had got this brilliant partnership going. I think he was playing further up the pitch, wasn't he? And, you know, in November 2009, it just looked like England have really got it right now. They've got a top manager. They're better than they were in 2006. They've got to be massive, massive chance in this World Cup. What happened from there?
I think the whole preparations. We went to Austria for 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever it was. And that was just disastrous. He took the lads who were on standby.
Yeah.
And they knew they were on standby. And so I remember we had an 11-11 game and you could see lads were going in trying to
and get that place.
Take someone out. We were sat in your bedroom for night, oxygen mask on for 90 minutes to acclimatise, and it was like you're in the middle of nowhere. And then we went home.
Yeah.
The lads who were on standby obviously left the squad, and then we went back to Austria.
Yeah.
And it was torture. It was just like, Jesus Christ. Then we went out to the actual hotel and the training. Pitch was really nice.
Yeah.
That was as good as we had, but again, that was in the middle of nowhere. And, and those things which the culture and the environment which all the players used to change with Capello.
Mm.
So I remember the tall Matthew Upson, he had to lose like 4 kilos.
Right.
And Matthew
Upson. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So we all obviously done that. You do your body fat and weight. And so he told Matthew Upson he had to lose 4 kilos, I think it was, something like that. And I remember we were all talking about saying,
how?
He's got in the squad through his performances.
Yeah.
You can't change one's diet now because it's
a month before the World Cup, 2 weeks before.
You can't change that now, whatever. And we had a nutritionist come in, a new nutritionist. He was following lads up like throughout the season.
Right.
He didn't make it to the World Cup, but he was following lads up at like 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, leaving messages. So it was a bit strange. But then the training, so the recovery sessions the day after the game, for instance, normally what lads would do, some would do a little jog, some would stay inside, do the bike and pool and whatever. But we had to do these runs, in which I think it's big in Italy, but obviously what they do over there. There was a guy come in who his treatment was you to lie on the bed and then run a hairdryer over your body for 4 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it was all strange. It was all different, and so it was. And I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm just saying it was all different, and I think there was too many small changes, which.
Bit different to Fergie's hairdryer treatment.
Yeah. it was mad. And Capello changed, and he was so strict. Like this, you couldn't have sauce or different butter and stuff like that. And then remember, it was before one game, he just completely changed and did away with it. Right, I'll have a beer, wine, whatever.
I remember that in Rustenburg. Yeah, that?
And the lads were like, so he found it. Different, I think, being an international manager.
Well, I find that really interesting because it felt to us that he changed in the run-up to the tournament. I think he dropped about 6 players who we thought were going to go, like Theo Walcott.
Yeah.
And then he was trying to get people like Scholes out of retirement.
Yeah.
And it just seemed that this guy who seemed so in control, like knew exactly what he was doing, just suddenly making decisions that where did that
change? And I think there was... And the players see it, would have been not.
Yeah.
Lads aren't stupid, and we see an ongoing battle between John Terry and Baldini.
Yeah.
And you could see that on a daily basis, really, coming out in the press, and one bit from him, one bit from him.
Yeah.
And Rio got injured.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of disruptions in that squad.
Yeah. What was it actually like at Rustenburg? I think you've said to me that, again, the story we wrote was... You know, it was like a prison camp, the players were bored. But you said to me, actually, camp is fine and players can deal with that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's normal. The hotel was nice.
Yeah.
You have a games room, you have your room where you can watch the games on the TV. And that's once the World Cup starts, it was the stuff in Austria first of all.
Yeah.
But actually, once you're in that camp and once the World Cup starts, it's brilliant. You just sat around watching games.
Yeah, you're fans again, yeah.
Lads just sat around watching games and whatever. So, that was all fine. The actual camp there was fine. I think the different disruptions, obviously, was mentioned with JT and Baldini and obviously Rio getting injured and stuff like that. But once you're there, we went out and played a game of golf.
At Sun City.
Yeah, it was fine, really.
There also seemed to be a bit of a power battle between JT and Stevie. At least JT fancied being the captain and he... gave a couple of interviews sort of saying as much. Were you conscious of that as players?
Not really. Who's captain then? Was it JT?
Stevie ended up captain.
Yeah. Not really.
No.
When was JT captain and was he after that?
He was captain before that. I think the captaincy was taken
off him.
Yeah.
Not really.
No, I think that wasn't a factor.
No, I think it's... whether between the two of them, I wouldn't say from Stevie's point of view.
Yeah.
It would have been more... it had to change, I think, what the FA have done to change, rightly so, because you had, like, when JT was captain, basically, we had all Chelsea staff in there.
Yeah.
So we had Chelsea masseurs, Chelsea physios.
Yeah.
Which obviously Man United masseur was in there, but there was small things which, when you play an away game, you fly back. We've always flight to London or Luton, drop the lads off from London.
Right.
Then we have to get off the plane, go through security, and get back on. So we went on like 2 hours after the lads in London was, and then for your preparations for your club. So there was issues. So then when I went in as captain, we ended up changing it then and rotating it. So one time we do Manchester, one time we do London.
So it's fairer.
So
yeah,
changed it that way really. But I think that was more, that suited obviously all the FA officials and stuff like that as well. That
we were in London,
But in the tournament, I didn't see anything with Steve and JT.
On the pitch, I mean, you start off that USA game and on the front foot, England score really early, and for 10 minutes it does look like, wow, this is England's going to roll on here. And then came the goal, Dempsey scored and Rob Green sort of fumbled it. It seemed to me at the time watching that affected the team more than it should have done.
I don't know. I think we just couldn't get them react to that and get the second goal.
Okay.
And then I just think it was, we went from that, then the next game was
Algeria.
And I remember the fans booing after like 10 minutes, and you get frustrated because you're doing everything, you're prepared and trying to prepare the right way. You're doing everything you can to try and win, and it doesn't happen. And then you, as a player, I get frustrated, and that's where you're seeing obviously my frustration come out. That you're getting labelled like you don't care, and it's far from it. It's the complete opposite. You probably care too much, and you're trying too much, so that's why you get frustrated. And I shouldn't, obviously, shouldn't have said anything what I said down the camera, but that's that frustrating that you care and you want to do well. And in that tournament, I was like a blur the whole tournament.
Why? Just
I couldn't control it, even in training. I couldn't control the ball.
Why?
I don't know. I just couldn't get used to the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was the altitude there. I just, honestly.
Just one of those periods.
If you were watching me in training, I was the same.
Really?
I couldn't.
What was going through your mind?
I was just like, well, I don't know. I was just like, what's going on here? It was weird.
But your preparation, you got unlucky with an injury again, didn't you? So it wasn't the perfect preparation for you either.
No. I think I had it before most tournaments, really. Yeah. So that's football, and you get injuries, and you're never playing 100% fit anyway. But for the actual tournament, I was fit, I was fine. I just.
You haven't got your rhythm.
Yeah, I just couldn't. I don't know. I was just terrible in training and in games.
I find it interesting that the you explain that Algeria thing really well. That the thing that really upsets you as a player is a perception of not trying, and that has been thrown at England teams.
Yeah.
At tournaments, can you sort of explain to fans that what the actual reality is?
Yeah, I think it's just a overwhelming pride to play for your country. Yeah. And see, I've got obviously the England flag tattooed on my arm, and it's a huge honour. And you're doing everything you can to try and do well. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes you're not good enough, whatever that is. But it's never through a lack of trying. I think for the players, it means. We used to sit around having conversations, talking about how great it would be to do something and win something for the country. And everyone's given everything really they can, and sometimes it just doesn't happen for you. Whatever. So that was always hard for me to say. Remember, we played Arsenal after, I think it was after the 2010 World Cup, and we played Arsenal away. We warmed up, and remember, I got absolutely battered.
Did you?
Arsenal fans, you could never play for your country. I know, like, it was like, it's coming on, but I get it to a certain extent because you're the same. Like, I'm the same watching games now, and sometimes saying, why is he playing or what's?
Yeah,
but I sort of get it from the fans' point of view. But I think that's always a for a player to get labelled that you don't care or you're not trying.
Yeah,
that's tough for a player to say.
Would that Algeria game be your like low point in terms of England memory?
I think the whole tournament was, honestly, I don't know, like, it was like a blur, and I just couldn't focus, and no stuff come out of my private life because a couple of months after that or whatever that was, but I had no idea that was
that
coming out.
So
I've heard people say, oh, that must be on his mind, so they weren't. I didn't even know that was coming out. It was just
football.
Yeah, I just couldn't process the whole tournament.
Yeah. I mean, and tournaments are over before they start sometimes, aren't they? So it's not like you get time.
Yeah, so it's just sometimes you get into a rhythm and I just couldn't get into that. I couldn't, in training, it was the same. It was mad.
I think the time that Fabio then said you could all have a beer was after the Algeria game, if I remember right. And
I can't remember which game, just
it. I think he told us as a press that it's time to let the lads relax a little bit and so on. So I think it was after the Algeria. After that, I'll check.
That was strange. Lads were like, what's going on here? Yeah. Like, so no one done anything, everyone just sat there. And then I always remember Joe Cole, who's funny, yeah, I'm not going to be playing anyway, so we ordered a sex on the beach. So he's just like, it was bad. So it was just so strange that, like, after games with Sven, the players would have a beer. And,
yeah.
Until but with Capello, it was just like, that was a no-go, so it was strange.
and you did actually do better in the final game against Slovakia. Defoe scored and it was a solid enough win. Then you, of course, you end up facing Germany, who are building that team that ended up winning the World Cup in 2014. Were they just too good? Is it as simple as that? They were just, you got them at the wrong moment and they were a brilliant team.
I think if Frank's goal would have stood, I think we would have beat them.
Yeah.
I think we obviously went down and then we went on the front foot and we had momentum. We got Matthew Upson scored.
Yeah.
And then it's probably because he lost a bit of weight.
Yeah, yeah. Made the difference, yeah.
And then if Frank's goal would have stood, we had them on the back foot.
Yeah.
So I think we would have went on and won that game. And then actually, even at 2-1 in the second half, we were pushing at a few chances and Dyer was on the break. And once went to 3-1, we obviously, again, left ourselves open to get the fourth. So, but again, that's that bit of luck, which we hope if that goes in, I think potentially we could have beat them.
I mean, when Frank's goal goes in, and you could see from the press box that it was about 2 yards over the line, and...
You could see from the pitch.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, you could see it was clearly in. So it was frustrating.
Are you looking at the referee going, what?
Yeah, you just... It was so obvious and you could... There's somewhere it's the bar, bounces down and you don't know.
Yeah.
That one, you could clearly see it was in. So it was strange, really. And,
well, I think that goal was responsible for VAR effectively, because that was the start of goal line technology.
Oh, was that then?
FIFA said we've got to do goal line technology, and then of course that leads to.
Yeah, so. You could clearly see.
Yeah.
It was miles in.
So you come off and you've been beaten 4-1 by Germany, and it's a good German team.
Yeah.
But because it's Germany and because it's England, you know there's going to be a backlash. What was the feeling after?
Again, just all this disappointment. Yeah. Everyone just gutted. Really, so then you just can't wait to get home. Then you don't want to be around it. You don't want to. You just want to get away and
forget it.
And then I've seen it where lads have been criticised like for going sick on holiday, but you've got a short window to prepare for your club. So it's
what else are you supposed to do?
But you're constantly obviously thinking of it and what you could have done different and stuff like that, so it's just it's a low moment when you come out of any tournament.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store.
And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The final World Cup for you is 2014. You're in a different position at that point. Suddenly you're the senior player. You've got young guys like Raheem Sterling and Sturridge and Jordan Henderson that you and Stephen are, you know, the senior pros trying to help them. So did it feel different just for you as a person going into that World Cup?
A little bit, but not too much. We brought Steve Peters in.
Yeah.
It was strange because I know he spoke with Stephen. He worked with Stephen and Liverpool.
At Liverpool.
So I remember I spoke to, obviously Stephen would push for him to get in and was fine with him in. But the issue I had was he was then saying, like, you have to speak to, it was going up on the board, you have to speak to Steve Peters at this time. So I questioned it. I said, if the player as an individual wants to speak to him, he can speak to him.
Yeah.
If Steve Peters wants to speak to us as a team, no problem. Mm-hmm. But as an individual, the player has to be the one to go to him, because all of a sudden you might mess the player's head up, or
yeah,
he might speak to someone else who he's speaking to. And so we done it that way, which was fine. I thought Steve was good. He had a bad few weeks, I think. Obviously, yeah. Liverpool
yeah.
lost the title.
Yeah.
Ronnie O'Sullivan got beaten the final, who he spoke to. And then we went out on the group stages, yeah. So I don't think he had the best of...
So that second book he was going to bring out got cancelled.
Don't think he had the best of months. We went out to Portugal. And the drug testers come over, South American, obviously worked for FIFA. And I was the first one to get done. It was so strange. They tried to get blood out of me last time, couldn't get any. And then they were like, digging it in, right in the needle, then starting my right arm, couldn't get in my arm, like all bruised.
Yeah.
And then they forgot to take the clasp off. We put a complaint in because they messed up. Then you were doing both urine and blood. So when you were doing the urine, they were just putting it on the side. So it was all getting mixed up. All the players.
Wow.
Urine. So if one player was, I'd done something, it was just all. So we put a complaint into FIFA on that.
That was in Portugal.
Yeah, that was in Portugal. But then, other than that, the preparation everything was fine. The food was terrible.
Yeah,
in Brazil.
What was the?
So we spoke to the chef. We couldn't get food in from England, so we had to get food from Brazil. And like the chicken, everything was terrible.
What you mean? Like, wasn't well cooked, or just wasn't?
It just
good.
Weren't good
quality
for us to prepare, and you try and get everything right. The food was nowhere near. And like you can sound like a diva or whatever, but we try and do everything right, and the food weren't good enough.
Well, I must admit, I mean, you were in the middle of Rio training at the end of Copacabana, and from a journalist's point of view, that was amazing because you got to stay on Copacabana and brilliant. But I did wonder why you were there, because the traffic was poor.
It took us about an hour, I think, to get to training. Yeah. It was a strange location, and the hotel weren't normal. It was like a tall, obviously, city hotel.
Yeah.
Rather than in previous, in South Africa, in Germany, they were isolated hotels, which was better for us. So it was a strange location where we stayed, and training pitch was fine.
Mm-hmm.
That was all okay. And then, obviously, the results weren't good enough.
But I felt you actually played well in that World Cup as a team. I mean, the results were historically the worst ever England results at a tournament. But I think if you look at the performances, you played against a really good Italy team.
Yeah.
And it could have gone either way. And you had two brilliant players in Marchisio and Perlo who made a difference.
Yeah.
But it wasn't... You were a young team. It wasn't like you were beaten by a team that you would say England should have beaten.
Yeah, no, I think we certainly could have won that Italy game. And the same with Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were the best team, and then obviously it was.
And it was that you were out after the Uruguay game.
Was it?
And there was a.
Was Stevie's back pass? Was it what?
It was his header.
Back header, yeah. So we could have. So then to go out after two games, that was horrible, I remember. And then going into the Costa Rica game, weird.
Pointless.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. You just didn't want to be there.
It was a very strange tournament.
You just didn't want to be there, and it was, and then you're playing for Pride, and I think Roy took a different stance in how he dealt with the players for that tournament. So Roy was working with Steve Peters as well, and he managed it a little bit different as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could see before the Costa Rica game that had all gone out the window.
Oh, right, he was back to drilling there.
He got his angry head on again.
Yeah, okay.
But that was again to go out.
Yeah.
After two games, and it was just horrible.
I felt the goal you scored as a team against Italy, you cross it from Sturridge from the left. I mean, that's one of the best England World Cup goals. It's a fantastic goal. That was what that team could do when it clicked.
Yeah, no, I think Sturridge was obviously in good form.
Mm-hmm.
And for that sort of being honest, I think myself and Stephen had to...
Mm-hmm.
Had to manage Sturridge throughout the whole tournament.
Yeah, in terms of the pressure and stuff.
He was a player who needed a lot of confidence in him. We had to manage him between the two of us. And I'm thinking, I'm having to manage this player who's took my spot in the team. If I'm playing out wide, so I'm trying to help him and giving him... there's loads of things we had to do to first of all get him on the pitch.
Yeah.
So we're giving him a lot of confidence, trying to give him confidence and belief, and trying to tell him he's not injured and stuff like that, which is crazy, really.
Yeah.
And that's taken a lot of your focus and time up as well.
Yeah. You played on the left and you played really well. Do you mind doing that shift?
Yeah, I didn't mind at times playing on the left. I didn't want to play there consistently, but I've played on the left, right, different times. And not so much for England, more obviously for United, but I didn't obviously I would prefer to play up top, but didn't mind at times. Sometimes you go there and you get more space and you can get on the ball a bit more, so at times it didn't matter.
The Uruguay game brought your first World Cup goal, and I think you hit the post with a header, didn't you, earlier on, and then keeper made a really good save at another point. Was it in your mind at all that, like, when am I going to score?
Yeah, it was. And was thinking about scoring and obviously getting off the mark in the World Cup and stuff. So it plays on your mind a bit, I'd scored in different tournaments at the Euros and just the World Cup. I just managed to, obviously, until that moment. So that was frustrating that I'd get my first goal and then you're out.
Yeah.
So
about 10 minutes
you
later.
Wanted to obviously score and then try and kick on. And I felt that would happen. Normally I'd go on runs, but then to go out in the tournament was frustrating.
Do you remember the finish?
It was the yard out, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you had to adjust your feet.
That was
quite decent.
Yeah, but I don't think we could have missed that one. it just obviously felt to be in a nice position and could have tapped in. So.
And we mentioned the winning goal for Uruguay and came off Stephen's head and Suarez ran in and, I mean, absolutely smashed it in.
Yeah.
What was he like to play against that day? Because he'd come back from a knee injury and he just looked like he was on a personal mission to get his team through.
He was always hard to play in Suarez, and I can imagine for defenders as well. He doesn't stop. And strange, really, because he almost boots the ball at you on purpose and somehow gets the rebound and ricochet. But no, he was at that time as well. I think he was incredible.
Yeah.
An incredible player.
I mean, he's a street player, isn't he? And I think at heart, you were a bit of a street player as well.
Yeah, I think that Uruguay team was. That's what they were. And, they were horrible. They didn't really let us get into a rhythm in the game. They were always little fouls. And, I remember, I think I spoke with the press about the game management of us as a team. And even sometimes staying down, trying to get people booked and stuff like that, which other countries were a lot better at them what we were, and that's what they done the whole game, didn't let us get into a rhythm, and then they snatched the win from us.
I remember it well. You gave the press conference, the kind of dreaded farewell press conference when England were about to fly home, but you said exactly that. You said, we need to get more streetwise, we maybe need to realise that you can still do all the English fair play but just be a little bit smarter.
Yeah, I think especially the South American teams, that's a real strength of theirs, and how they calm the referee and they take the sting out of the game, and we never good for.
Reflecting on it all, you know, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like just regret that England didn't do it in your time? What do you feel the differences were? Was there one thing that kind of stopped you doing it?
Strange, there's regret, but then there's also pride.
Yeah.
So there's different emotions from it, and obviously you always look back and you think as a team we failed to do what we wanted and what we thought we were capable of. So that's where the regret comes in, but and I think it always goes back to it's from my point of view, and obviously on my teammates, not my teammates, it was never through lack of trying. It was maybe at that tournament or in certain games he wasn't good enough, and that cost us really. So a huge amount of pride playing for your country in the World Cup, but also regret that we didn't actually go further than we did.
And do you feel, you know, maybe there were bits of your career that worked out better, but you couldn't have tried any more at World Cups? You don't look at them with personal sort of regret or anything?
No, I think the only one is probably 2006. As I said, probably looking back, you would not have won the one probably, but I know from the work, which has gone into detail on, you know, was trying to get the food right and details around what we were trying to do and get everything right. We tried everything we could to make sure we had the best of everything we could to make sure we could perform better on the pitch, and just weren't to be.
Thanks, Wayne. Fantastic. Brilliant.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation between Jonathan and Wayne Rooney there. Remember, we're going to be bringing you a daily podcast throughout the World Cup. So hit the notification button. Make sure you're subscribed. Go to thetimes.co.uk/thegame. And remember, download the Times app for more of our great journalism throughout the tournament.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.